Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to and hopefully enjoy. Today I'm still on a cruise ship and at the last 10 minutes of the previous podcast that I recorded with me and Juliana, there was some noise came through. Hopefully today I'm not going to have that same noise come through of the motor turning on, the engines turning on directly below my cabin here. But maybe it'll happen again. If so, I'll probably just press pause and finish it off some other time. So let's get straight into it then. Don't have a lot of time today. I'm going to be talking about a new novel from Peter Watts. And Peter Watts is a Canadian author who is one of my favourites. He's got some really great stuff. Blindsight, he released back in 2008, and this is his first novel since then. It's taken quite a long time to get it out. Blindsight, though, is a great book, and you can download it for free from his website. If you just go to rifters.com and click on Blindsight, you can download it for free. Juliana, what are you reading over there in bed at the moment?
Blindsight.
Yeah, Juliana is reading Blindsight because we actually both downloaded it again because I really enjoyed that. So this is the follow-up to Blindsight, but it's not so much a sequel, it's not a prequel. I think it's called what you call a sidequel, where this is the stuff that is happening at the same time as what's happening on Blindsight. No spoilers for Blindsight, or this book actually, but in Blindsight, vampires go to space and meet non-conscious aliens. I know it's a weird thing to say this, but it's Blindsight is a first contact book, and it features a guy called Siri, who has got some weird brain conditions of his own, and he is there along with some other kind of like people with other brain conditions, and they are being led by a vampire. And the idea being that the vampires are back in our gene pools, deep in our gene pools, where we actually can hold the we hold all of the DNA that we need for previous species of hominids. And, you know, we know some of those. We know the Cro-Magnon man, and we know the Neanderthals and all that kind of stuff. But also back then there was a vampire stuff, which, and again, I don't want to get too much into this, but just check out Blindsight and you can work out what goes on with vampires. And vampires have got, you know, very, very high level intellects. They're very fast. They're very clever, just superior to humans in every way, except for a few deficiencies. For example, they have, you know, they don't like sunlight, so they try and stay in. They're kind of a nocturnal hominid species, which didn't do very well for them. And they've got these other disorders that you can trick them into, you know, kind of their brain scrambling with the crucifix glitch, where if they see a right angle, like a cross is set in right angles, it makes their brains flip out. And there's other things. And unfortunately, if they try and fix those glitches, it means that they don't have the powers of the vampires. So it's along with the powers of the vampires comes the weaknesses of things like the cruciform glitch, which are a bit strange. So anyway, all of that stuff is happening on Blindsight with Siri and the vampires out on the ship, spaceship called the Theseus. And the Theseus is being powered from a thing called Icarus, which is a kind of like a power station down near the sun. And the power station is using kind of quantum entanglement or something like that to transmit power not only to Theseus, but also it transmits power back to Earth as well. And by transmitting power all the way up to Theseus, the spaceship can travel very quickly from Earth out into the Oort cloud and then change direction and try and find the spaceship that's out there somewhere, this alien spaceship which is out drifting in interstellar space. And this book, that's what, you know, you find out about that in, of course, in Blindsight. Whereas this book says, hey, what's happening down on Earth and what's happening on Icarus is that not only is power being sent from Icarus to Theseus, like via quantum whateverness, but at the same time, something has come back from Theseus back to Icarus. And some people get wind of that and decide to go there. Now, the whole story here in Echopraxia is told from the point of view of a baseline, a mostly baseline human with not a lot of mental implants and all these other things, you know, that most people have in the year 2090 or 2095 or whenever this book is set. And his name is Daniel Brooks, and Daniel Brooks is a biologist, and he's made a mistake. You're not quite sure what the mistake is in the past, but he's made a mistake, and he's kind of being forcibly retired, and he goes on sabbatical, and he goes out into the desert, in the Oregon desert, and he is cataloguing species which are going extinct or haven't gone extinct, and which ones have got a lot of gene transfer from all of these all these genetic modifications which were meant to be done in the lab and meant to be controlled, but everything's going out in the wild, and they're not even tracking extinctions anymore. You know, they can't even keep track of how many species are going extinct on Earth. To be honest, Earth is utterly, utterly, utterly fucked up in a way which is very, I would say, kind of entertaining to read, but not very entertaining to read, very depressing to read. But that's what Peter Watts does best. He does very, very grim futures, but yet written in such a fascinating way that you can't help but keep reading to see how much humans have fucked up the world in the future. And so we read stuff from Daniel Brook's point of view, and he says over there in the distance over there is a monastic order called the Bicameral Order, and he knows that there's some kind of monks which kind of believe in God or don't believe in God and have faith and things like that, but they all link their brains together, and by linking their brains together they can progress very quickly, and they have lots of patents, and they make lots of intellectual leaps, and in that way they can fund their order. And what happens is that somebody starts attacking them, and then some zombies turn up and some vampires turn up, zombies being people who used to be alive but now have their brains taken over by other controlling factor. And it turns out a vampire is attacking with zombies, but at the same time someone else is attacking, and then they kind of meet up, and the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So what happens is that Daniel Brooks tries to escape from the zombies, and he joins up and he goes into this monastery with the Bicameral Order, and while he's there the vampires come in and they're being attacked and other stuff happens, and there's this really cool thing that they've got this captive tornado, a captive twister that's above the order there, above this monastery, and they've got this captive tornado that they actually draw power from. It kind of sucks power down from the atmosphere, sucks power down from the jet stream, and they use it to generate power, but then it's under their control. And when they're being attacked, they send out this tornado across the landscape to controlling them and attack things. Very, very cool scenes. But it turns out that Daniel Brooks ends up with this order, and he meets people who are the translators of this order. There's a big group of them, people with minds that are all linked together, but they can't really talk to people outside of their minds because they've lost power of speech. And that's the thing, no matter what happens, you always lose some capabilities. There's only so much stuff that can go on inside the brain of a human, and if you have massive intellect, it means you lose intelligence in other ways. You lose sentience, you lose ability to communicate. So there's this other cast of people, like these other helpers within this in this bicameral order, as they're known, and they are just the translators, and they kind of listen to what they're saying or see them interacting. And there's one of the guys who only communicates by board games, like he plays board games and the other people have to kind of interpret his board games, and other people communicate in these other ways. So Daniel Brooks meets Liana and some of these people who are the translators. He also meets a guy called, let me have a look at my notes here, I made a note of this, a guy called Jim Moore. And Jim Moore is the father of Siri, who is the main character in Blindsight. So there is a connection here. And in Blindsight, Siri starts communicating with his father back on Earth. And in this book, we realize, oh, Jim Moore is communicating with Siri while he's out on the Theseus. And you realize, oh, what, these two books are running side by side. And the things that are kind of hinted at in near the end of Blindsight is kind of then also hinted at, and the stuff at the end of Blindsight is hinted at in here. I think you could actually read either of these books in either order. I think that it'd probably be slightly easier to read Blindsight first, because that kind of explains the vampires a bit better, pretty much explains it completely. But there is a, I guess you could read them either way. So yes, we have Daniel Brooks, who is our baseline human, which is great because we see everything from his point of view, and every time that something comes up, he's like, oh, I can't believe that's happening. Oh, and I can't believe that's happening. So, oh, this is happening again. And we, like you say, because we are baseline humans, we get to see the vampires and the zombies and this mind-melding order of transhumanists there as well. We also get Valerie the vampire, who is the main kind of antagonist for a lot of this thing, but not really the antagonist, kind of just tagging along for the ride, not really quite sure what's going on there. So there is some fantastic action scenes and some really interesting kind of like horror scenes as well, because, you know, they're there and all the time there's this vampire and everybody can feel the vampire, even if you don't know the vampire there. And the vampire isn't just scary as in, oh, they want to, the vampire wants to kill us or eat us or suck our blood. There's, you know, the vampire has other motivations going on, but also it's not just a vampire that is scary, kind of like on a dread kind of point of view, but also scary that the vampire can be technologically very, very advanced as well. So we read through these chapters of these guys actually in the end going up into space and going to check out the Icarus and to see what's going on there, to see what's happened, what's come back from the Theseus, what's come back from the novel in Blindsight. Is there a connection? What is the connection between these two things? And of course things play out in that way. I don't want to give too much away. I just say read it. The contents, these are the different sections of the book: Prelude, Primitive, Parasite, Prey, Predator, Prophet, and Postscript, and then some acknowledgements and references and things like that. So we have lots of P's there, and of course we start off with Primitive, and then we see what, you know, Daniel Brooks, our main character, what he does all the way through this. So I really enjoyed this story. What else have I got? Oh yes, the ship that they go across to down to Icarus with, which is orbiting around the sun, is a ship called the Crown of Thorns, and I really enjoyed this. There seems to be, I don't know, it's one of those things that kind of makes sense. There's some spaceships that you read about and you go, what's really going on here? Artificial gravity? How does that work? If they've got artificial gravity, what kind of space drive do they need? Why are they using rockets for driving, but then they can control mass and energy to make, you know, so the it's got some fun centrifugal gravity thing going on here. It's also got a handy diagram, or the external layout, with the Crown of Thorns. There's a picture at the start, at the front of it, and you see there's the parasol and the main dogging hatch and the flywheel and the hub. It's pretty cool. One part of it, because it's got a big parasol, reminds me very much of the movie Sunshine, because in this book they're going to the sun, so they have to have a big parasol to protect them from the sun, and you get these hubs and flywheels and all these docking hatches. So it's a bit like that, but it needs a big drive. So you've got this massive, massive drive, you know, 200 meters across at the back, and the parasol there. So it's actually a pretty cool little picture of the spaceship there. And you wouldn't really guess, like, you know, what you really want from science fiction horror is you want people on a well-realized spaceship being chased by aliens. And that's what we get. I mean, that's what you have: an alien, you have a big thing with lots of nooks and crannies and lots of places for people to go, and where can the vampire be hiding, or where can the alien be hiding, what's going on here? And it was testing through it and going around and trying to find the vampire, and you're like, oh, the vampire's here, we've got to lock on there. Oh no, the vampire's hacked into the system, and then they're actually, the vampire's over, Valerie the vampire is over there, and we've got to find them, and we've got to go to the hole. No, we've got to go to the spine, we've got to go to the hub, we've got to go to the habs and the all these different places. A lot of good fun there in the in the spaceship. It's a lot of fun to read. I mean, the characters, I actually really enjoy the characters. All of them seem to have histories. Some of them a little bit convenient histories, but then you think, these two characters had kind of this overlap in a previous life. I mean, that's really convenient that now they come back together. And then you realize, oh no, their lives are being controlled by people way, way more powerful than them and way more complex than them, and who have long plans and who actually pick people. They never pick people randomly. They can consider all the histories of these people, which makes a lot of fun. Again, sometimes a little bit too convenient, but you think, no, this is actually planned. This is plotted right from the very beginning, not just in terms of the story, but also the characters within the story are actually going, how much of my life is plotted? How much, you know, real self-control do I have, or self, like, how much free will do I actually have? That's what a lot of these books are actually about, talking about that kind of thing. So what else do I want to talk about? Yeah, the characters, very interesting. Daniel Brooks is quite fascinating. I really like the different play between, like, the idea of, like, if you are a baseline human, like, do you have more free will if you're baseline, if you don't impose, like, if you don't get these different implants? You know, does getting an implant tie you to somebody else's plans or something like that? It's a weird thing. I don't want to give too much away, but part of Daniel Brooks is like, oh yeah, when I was young, I was bitten by a snake, or I was bitten by a spider, and they got some kind of nerve toxin in there, and because I have this nerve toxin, it means I can't have any augmentations, or I can't improve my brain scanning ability, and I always have to use this, and I can't use that, and because if I have this implanted, I don't know what's reality. And you realize it's all, he thinks he's got free will, he thinks he's doing it for one reason, but other people say, no, that's not a reason, because if that was a reason, you would have just, you know, you'd have just taken the drugs to be able to be able to take this augmentation, or you'd have been just had that fixed. That's actually a really cheap and easy fix, and you could have just got that fixed, and then you could have this thing. So there's layers and layers of this, like, you know, how much control do you give away, or how much control do you really have? And he's trying to say, oh, I have total control over what I do because I don't have any of these augmentations, whereas other people are saying, no, you actually get more control because then you're more in control of your surroundings. You have a better view on your surroundings. And then he's going, no, but I actually just want to see things with my own eyes. If I can see things with my own eyes, I know that there's not any layers in between. There's no technology between my eye and then what I see. Whereas you people who have got your eyes replaced or different things that have been printed on your brain. And there's all these conversations which go backwards and forwards like that. And of course, it plays out perfectly into the plot at the end of the book. And it is, again, one of those, I think I mentioned this in my review of Blindsight. It's one of those things that you get to the end of the book in this big reveal and you're like, oh, I know what's going to happen all the way through. Like, what's been happening all the way through. And the characters were thinking this, and the characters were seeing this, and the characters were noticing that. But actually, because it's not that I know what happens at the end of this book, but you can kind of see things coming, and it's kind of all explained. And then suddenly it's revealed what's happened, and you're like, yes! And I thought that was going on. And of course, by the end of the book, it gets down to mostly, you know, the characters get whittled away, and some of them survive, and then some of them don't. And of course, Daniel Brooks is the one who keeps going all the way through to the end. And again, there's some interesting... I don't want to give away what happens at the end either, but I thought it was a really fun story that his character goes in a full circle or goes on a complete arc there, and other characters come in informing that and reinforcing that, and, you know, all the way through. So what else do I want to say? Let me go back to my notes here as well. So characters, oh yeah, what I really, really love about Peter Watts is that he writes the future better than any other writer. I read his the Rifters trilogy, all of those books, and he's writing about, you know, this not really a post-apocalyptic Earth, but an Earth which has just been, it's like a post-human climate and everything disaster, like everything, every bit of damage that the humans could, you know, wreak havoc wise on the Earth, like what all of those things, what could happen, like what would be the worst thing? Actually, the worst thing, all of those things happen at the same time, and that's kind of what they do with Rifters. Here we don't actually see a lot of what happens on the Earth in Echopraxia and over in Blindsight, mostly because a lot of the action takes place off the Earth, and you only see a little bit what's happening in the deserts of Oregon. I don't actually think there are any deserts of Oregon at the moment, but in the book there are deserts in Oregon. And so what Peter Watts does, he just thinks it's like this amazing thing, like every page or every three pages or something, he'll just drop something into the story and it'd be like, oh wow, I've never really thought of that. And it's just a cool thing that he's obviously read somewhere and he's just extrapolated 90 years in the future of what that could be. And then there's another thing a few pages later and you're just like, oh wow, that's amazing, why couldn't I do that? And it's sometimes it's just like one or two sentences, or like even half a sentence, or just something that comes up in a list of something that's gone on, you know, with this creature's gone extinct, or this thing's happened over here, or that thing's developed over there, or there's this new technology here. And it's just part of the tapestry of the future. And what makes it interesting is that it's all in there. There's everything in there, every single part of the future in Peter Watts' brain that he puts down here in this book, he puts into his books. Everything that is changed, everything is new, everything is different, everything is twisted. And it's totally different from other science fiction books where, like, everything is the same except for one thing. Like, this one thing changes, but even that one thing that has changed in the book, it's just an analogue for something. Like, for example, in some books you'll have a robot. And you're like, okay, and the robot has a function. What is this robot's function? And the robot's function is the robot is a servant, or the robot is a soldier, or the robot is a generic threat, or the robot is whatever. You know, it could be anything. And in the end, it doesn't actually matter if it had been a robot, or it had been a human, or it had been a soldier, or it had been anything at all. It was because in the end, the story would have functioned okay with this other thing. You know, like I was saying before, like Alien, the movie Alien is... it's like a horror movie, it's like a slasher movie in space. And that same story would have worked no matter what the alien would have been. It could have been a vampire, it could have been a zombie, or it could have been all these other things. It's just a threat that the characters have to face, and the story of the characters and what they go through plays out in those terms. I mean, I'm not denigrating the story in any way, but the people who are there, the humans on the in Alien react very much so. And then there's the alien there, not the alien, the the, I was going to say android, what do they call it, the synthetic human there as well, you know. And but what's happening with that story between the synthetic humans and the alien, again, the actual alien itself doesn't really matter. What I love about this Peter Watts is that it's everything is not just an analogue for what we have now. Like, the whole world is turned upside down. The only way that we can get any view on this world is because we have Daniel Brooks as a translator from the world that he's seeing back into kind of a human language. Like you say, we have the bicamerals and they have a layer of people that they translate to, and then those people send their translation onto Daniel Brooks, and then Daniel Brooks as the character is kind of sending his translation onto Peter Watts, and Peter Watts is the, like, the author is the final translator for what we are then reading, for him to make sense of the future for us. But the future doesn't make sense, you know, like, it doesn't need to make sense, because these days what we have now wouldn't make sense to people 10 years ago. It's now September the 11th, and I was just watching a replay of, just a few minutes ago, watching a replay of the live coverage of the Twin Towers attacks and the Pentagon attack on September the 11th. And I realized that the people there didn't have a vocabulary for what they were seeing. They didn't have anything there. Like, there was no way for them to connect what was happening on their monitors in those newsrooms and what they were saying. There was nothing going on there. It was happening, and they were trying to describe it using language the best they could, but they didn't have the vocabulary of terrorism attacks. They didn't know Al-Qaeda. They didn't know this. They didn't know what had gone on there. You know, the vocabulary wasn't there. They were saying, oh, look, part of that building has come away. And we look at it now and we go, no, part of the building hasn't come away. The whole building has collapsed. The whole of trade, you know, the World Trade Center number one has collapsed. But there was like, oh no, part of the building has come away. And there was time and time again, they were saying that. It's like, oh, let's go and connect down to here. And they're like, oh, what we're going to do? You know, like, they were trying to talk about it, but they were trying to discover what they had. Now we have a translation for all of these things. We can just say 9/11. We can just say first responders. We can just say all of these different words which became part of our vocabulary. But those people didn't have it. It's like they needed a translator for the future. Of course, the future was happening for them. History was happening for them right there. But they didn't have that. And Peter Watts is our translator of the future. He's our glimpse of the future. Things are happening in this book, and it only takes a few words. It's like I say, just a sentence or a paragraph, and it creates an amazing future and kind of translates it back into words that we don't really understand what it means. We can't really understand what it means, but it is more than, like I say, it's more than just a flavor. It's more than just stuff. It's more than just like replacing what we know now with new words or new nouns to describe those same things, what they would be in the future. It's not like, oh, and he got into his hover car and he flew from A to B. And it's like, well, nowadays we can just catch a bus from A to B, or just take a boat from A to B, or just take anything from A to B. Whereas Peter Watts is describing a future where we don't go from A to B. Going from A to B isn't what's needed in this book. Of course, people do go from A to B, and there is a spaceship, and you could go, oh, the spaceship could be anything. But what I'm saying is that along the way, you realize that so much in the future has changed. Like, what we see now, the progress of technology that we have now is completely different. You know, different words come up and different other things come up, and it's just there all around us, and the different ways of interacting with technology. We have languages for what we do, and how we interact with things, and Peter Watts is doing so. And the reason why Peter Watts can do this is because he is a complete science nerd. And this really, I mean, I think he's got a PhD. Wait a second, I think I actually saved the Wikipedia page over in Instapaper on my thing here as well. So, career, Peter Watts, Canadian science fiction author and marine mammal biologist. So I think he's got a PhD in marine biology or something like that. Yeah, so a PhD from the University of British Columbia in the Department of Zoology and Resource Ecology. This guy knows what he's talking about with ecology and zoology, and this is why I really enjoy his stuff. Now, what we have here at the end of the book is we have his notes and references. And the notes and references take up, like, quite a few pages just in themselves. I'm just trying to find it on this. He sent me a PDF version of his book too. Oh, I'm still on that Wikipedia page. Let me go back to iBooks. So he sent me this thing here. So I can't work out how many pages of notes and references that he does there, but quite a lot of notes and references. And what we do have acknowledgements. So we've got like Yeah, 25 pages of notes and references, and at the end, 131 scientific papers and other publications are referenced. He actually puts it there at the end of the book. It's like, this is where I got this from. Like, Consciousness and Its Function, Neuropsychologica, 46, number 3, pages 862. The next one, Reading and Doing Arithmetic Non-Consciously. On Making the Right Choice, Deliberation Without Attention Effect, Attention and Consciousness, Two Distinct Brain Processes, An Electrophysiological Signature of Unconscious Recognition Memory, Evidence That Logical Reasoning Depends on Consciousness Programming, The Essence of Consciousness. So just this is just under the heading PsyOps and the Consciousness Glitch. And then we have here the Undead Update, so things like... I can't find it now. What's it? 20... A comparative analysis of pig, mouse, and human PCDHX genes. Coincident autopomorphins in the Upsilon, PC, all these gene complexes, and the role in vampire hominovirary, vampire genetics and epigenetics and stuff like that. So, the philosophical zombie, and that's a Wikipedia page. But anyway, 130 different scientific papers and other publications reference undead things, the Porteous Spider, which is a fascinating topic, which we don't want to get into. Don't look it up, just read this book, it's really interesting. Adaptive Delusional Systems, The Bicameral Condition, God and the Digital Universe, and then PsyOps and the Consciousness Glitch, and the Miscellaneous Background Ambience issues as well. I mean, that's like other things. So no wonder in a book which is about 300 pages long, 320 something pages long, if you're referencing 130 different scientific papers and other publications, this becomes a fantastic view into what the current science is, or what lots of different people thinking about what might be possible in the future. And of course, in the acknowledgements, Peter Watt says, okay, this, you know, talking about God and doing this kind of stuff and faith-based science is a bit weird, and it probably isn't, that's just not the way it works, but it makes for interesting science fiction. And this thing over here kind of works, and it's maybe a bit far-fetched, this is only a preliminary study, but wouldn't it be great if? And this thing over here, and that's of course just in the acknowledgements, but when you're reading the book, you're actually going, yeah, wouldn't it be great if this was actually the case? Wouldn't it be great if there wasn't just like a spider which thinks that's what this way, but an alien that thinks this way? What if it wasn't just this that worked like that, but actually the whole thing? What if this little thing over here with the human condition became weaponized, and it wasn't just one little glitch in one person's brain in the world who is disabled? You could actually like send it out and everyone have this glitch in the brain. This thing over here, which is just this one gene on this one animal in the bottom of an ocean over here, what happened if that was applied to sunflowers? And this thing, you know, it's just everything that goes on. And that's why, like I say, every, like, even within the main core of the story, still things are being thrown out there. It's like, oh, what about this? What about that? What about this idea? And that's what I like with someone like Peter Watts. It's taken him a long time to get this book out here, but I love the idea which just says, what will the future be like? The future will be like what it is now plus, you know, another 90 years or another 80 years of this fantastic research in all these different fields being applied to us. Like, what do we have now which came out of basic research in, you know, 30 years ago? What medicine do we have now which came out of basic research 30 years ago? What all this other stuff that came out of basic research 30 years ago, or 40 years ago, or 50 years ago, like with lasers and spaceships and all that. Like, all this basic research was done ages and ages ago, and it takes a long time to filter through to make our world utterly alien to what it was like for people, you know, from 50 years ago. And that's what Peter Watts is doing. He's getting all this basic research and all this fantastic fringe research, in not just in marine biology, and which is, you know, what the Rifters is about, you know, his Rifters trilogy is about, and all these other things, but he's bringing all these ecology things and science things and philosophy things and bringing them all these weird crazy stuff on the outside, and just going, look, if all this holds true, and even if it doesn't, what happens if this would affect our way of thinking into the future? And I think that's impressive. And exactly the kind of science fiction that I like. However, I do have issues with this book. I don't really have any issues with the book at all. I mean, it's not a perfect book. Sometimes the writing is a bit unclear. I'm like, oh, what's going on here? And I'm thinking, now, is this just slightly unclear writing, or is it because, you know, Daniel Brooks, our main character, doesn't know what's going on? I was like, no, he does know what's going on. I think it's sometimes a little bit clumsy. He moves so briskly through the story, so briskly from idea to idea, that sometimes I wish the book would just kind of slow down a bit. But again, that's kind of what makes his book so exciting to read, is that it's like just a roller coaster ride through so many ideas, along through very tense situations and some big situations and heroic situations and very anti-heroic situations too. What else do I have to say? No, I don't really have any complaints about this. I'm really glad that I read it as an ebook. I was thinking of waiting until an audiobook. I emailed Peter Watts a few months ago and said, "Hey, do you have an audiobook coming out of this?" He says, "Maybe." He said, "Yes, it'll be out sometime." But he sent me a PDF of the book anyway. But I'm really glad I read the ebook version because, like I say, just so many of these ideas, like, they come so fast, thick and fast, that you kind of have to pause a bit. But that's good. I quite like sometimes where you have to kind of keep notes. Well, not keep notes, but like as you're going through, you're kind of marking off and go, will that be important later? Will that be important later? But everything is so alien that everything could be important later. And in a book like this, pretty much everything is. Again, I don't want to give too much away, but I really, really, really enjoyed the end of this. What actually happens with Daniel Brooks as he comes through to the end and how all of these different themes and threads all come together into his one person, which I think is fascinating. I should actually send him an email just to make sure. Did Valerie know what was going on at the end? I think she did. And who was Valerie working for? Or what were her motivations through to the end? I'd Valerie the Vampire, I think I should email him to get that clarified, that it isn't just me reading into the book what happened. So, I don't have very much else to say about this. Really, really good book. Normally I talk about the themes of it, but I think I just have. Like, the themes of this is the craziness of the future and how difficult... I mean, I think that's the cop-out of so much far future. It's like, it's after the singularity, and after the singularity we can't predict what's going to happen. We can't say what's going to happen. So I'll just now write something which is very much like now, but it's happening inside the computer brain, and that's in the future past the singularity, and it can't be predicted, but it happens that everything in the future kind of turns out, and we get a detective story which could have been written in the 1930s, but it's just set post-singularity, because we can't know what happens, but actually what happens after there is just the same as always, but I'm just saying it's post-singularity. Whereas this book, there is no such thing as a singularity. It's actually said, we can't crack consciousness. We can't crack self-awareness. Self-awareness is this glitch in humans' brains which can't be computed, which is kind of a one-off, which can't be, I mean, it's an illusion, but it's also a one-off illusion where we can't force our computers to become self-aware. Everything has to be based in biology. Everything has to be based in human networks, in human brains, or at least hominid brains, and to improve hominid brains. That's where intuition comes from, and the computers just can't get there. So this is kind of like an anti-post-singularity book. It's like, no, we won't have singularities. We have to look at things through our current understanding, even if it takes 4 layers of translators from people who actually know what's going on, which we don't know what's going on. Only the mind of God knows what's going on. I really like the theological discussions of this. It's like there is God, and there is another thing that's a God, or is this a God? You know, and then there's people who think God exists, and they're actually the most powerful people. And you're like, well, wait, they can't be right. And it's like, well, we'll need another layer of translators to try and work out what they're thinking is God. But then, like, so we've got God, and then the bicamerals, and then these other translators, and then our main character, and he's got a translation thing as well between him, and there's other people explaining it to him. Like, layers and layers of translation all the way down to us. And I think that's what we need more of in our science fiction. We can't just rely on one author's thinking. I mean, of course, this is all just one author's thinking. It is just Peter Watts doing this. But what I'm saying is, like, in these things, it's in these books, we're like, and here is a post-singularity brain thing, and then it's one jump to the page, and then that page into our brains. And I'm like, no, we need to see these stories through more layers, like, through more network connections, through more stained glass windows. You know, like, we've got to see, like, what's happening is behind 4 stained glass windows. We kind of just see a shimmering of the story, and in each step along the way, like, it's one stained glass window is looking at another stained glass. That doesn't even make sense, that analogy, but you know what I mean. Like, we need those different things going on, and in the end we get one thing that we have. And I guess, I mean, maybe if this was written read to me as an audiobook, I wouldn't get all the acknowledgements, I wouldn't get all of the further reading, I wouldn't get 130 different names of different papers, like Evolutionary Accounts of Belief in the Supernatural Punishment, A Critical Review, Religion, Brain, and Behavior, Number 1, Volume 1, The Biological Evolution of the Religious Mind and Behavior, The God Issue, We All Born, you know, all these different things, and that's just in the God section as well. What's this other one? The split plane revisited. Lacking control increases illusionary pattern perception. You know, all of these different kind of things. I wouldn't have had all of that in the audiobook, but maybe the audiobook would have been yet another translation or another layer of translation or another layer of intermediary kind of storytelling between what the mind of God is saying and what we as the reader can finally understand about this. And I guess that's what I am now doing this podcast review. I'm kind of giving you this extra layer of interpretation of the mind of God via all these different layers down into you, which is why it's a weird thing that Peter Watts described this as kind of faith-based science fiction, even though it is totally not. It's got nothing to do with actual spirituality or Christianity or anything like that, but it is an interesting way to go, you know, to take a view of the wider universe via all of these different layers of interpretation. And I'm adding to that, I guess. So that's it for me. If you want to help support this podcast, the SFBRP, you can go to audibletrial.com /SFBRP and start up a trial for audio, Audible audiobook trial. You get a free book, and then if you continue on, you get one book a month in the gold plan, or two books a month with the platinum plan. I do the platinum plan. I just downloaded the follow-up to, or the next book in the series, I've lost it. Anyway, the book was called Splatter J by, and now I'm getting out my phone again, Splatter J, and I'm reading the Voyage of Sable Keach by somebody called back to Neil Asher. That was his name, Neil Asher. So next up, I've got that as well. I've also got Doomsday Book by Colin Willis, which is probably the single worst audiobook that I've ever listened to in terms of a bad book coming together with a bad narration. But it is one of the Hugo Nebula award-winning books. And so I've decided that I'm going to get through them. I'm just never going to finish it. And there's no way I'm getting onto the what's the other one? Blackout and All Clear as well. But I'm going to listen to try and get through a little bit more of Doomsday Book before giving up and reviewing it anyway. I would say, yeah, check out Splatter J, which is very good by Neil Asher. If you want a quick book recommendation, if you like fun biology-based military science fiction with pirates and flying dragons, yeah, I'm sure you'll enjoy that one by Neil Asher. Weird science fiction, military science fiction by Neil Asher. I'm going to be doing The Voyage of Sable Keach, which is the next book in that series. And audibletrial.com/SFBRP. Join me and be an Audible subscriber and help out the SFBRP. The other way, if you actually want to help out SFBRP, is if you go to my blog, the SFBRP blog, sfbrp.com. And there's also Amazon referral link. So if you're ever going to buy one of these books, just go to my blog or go to the episode links on sfbrp.com and click on the link there, and a little bit of money goes towards me, comes back to me, and of course it comes back to me in Amazon credits, and I will spend those credits on more books to review and to buy and review. So that happens as well. That's another way you can help out my reading, is by using my referral links to Amazon.com from sfbrp.com. And that pays for more books for me, just like the Amazon, just like the Audible thing, which is also owned by Amazon, also pays for my books and my own audiobook reading as well. So thanks a lot for that. If you want to email me, luke@juggler.net, I reply to every email that I get, any questions that you send in. The other good cool thing to do is to check out the SFBRP listener group on goodreads.com, and if you become a group member there, you can chat with other people who listen to this podcast. At the moment, people are chatting about some recent reviews, a review of Speaker for the Dead that we did there as well, and talking about the Berlin Wall in relation to that, and other people. I think the next topic of review that'll come up there is episode 250 of this podcast, and what we're going to do, or what I'm going to do, or what the listeners are going to do, or what me and Juliana are going to do for episode 250, one quarter of the way to 1,000 episodes, where we'll have to increment the number of numbers, the number of digits in the number that I used. I started off with episode 001, and then got to 0010, and then up to 100, and we're a quarter of the way to having to completely rewrite every single episode number. But I think we worked out it's going to be, like another 18 years or something before I get to episode... No, how many? Yeah, another 18 years or so before I get to episode 1,000. But we'll see how that one goes. Right, that's it from me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.